You're listening to Catch the Current, the coolest seafood podcast out there from the team at Undercurrent News, your trusted source for seafood prices, news, and data. I'm Amanda Buckle.
And I'm Lauren Castiglione. A quick thank you to our sponsor, Wise Fish. For more than 30 years, Wise Fish has helped seafood businesses simplify the way they work. From aquaculture and wild catch to processing and sales, Wise Fish brings everything together in one integrated platform. Find out more at wisefish.com/catchthecurrent.
This might finally be the episode where we cross the line.
Is that something that you should be saying right after I read a message from one of our sponsors?
Probably not. So I don't know if you remember, but way back in March at the Boston Seafood Show, while you were out schmoozing with who knows who, I got the chance to talk to Monica Talbert, the CEO and co-founder of the plant-based seafood company. She's someone I've been watching for some time.
That's not creepy at all.
Stop it. I've been professionally watching since I have a special interest in plant-based foods. She comes from a seafood background and then created plant-based solutions called Mind Blown that supposedly mimic the real texture and taste of seafood. Word on the web is that their plant-based Mind Blown scallops are to die for. After mastering the plant-based side, Monica showed up to the Boston show with a return to her seafood roots via her new line featuring real seafood. It's called Smash It, and the brand boosts that it's bringing big ball energy.
Excuse me?
You heard me. Smash It is what the company says is seafood reimagined, and I'll include a photo in the show notes, but first look, you wouldn't know that this product is seafood. Which is saying out loud is kind of weird, right?
Right.
But the product is this beautiful, colorful ball. It's made with 50% wild salmon and a ton of superfoods in a, and I quote here, a bold new format that makes eating seafood easier, healthier, tastier, and way more fun. So in addition to the salmon, other ingredients mixed into this ball include kale, yams, quinoa, chia seeds, flax seeds, orange peel. The combined ingredients are then coated in a bright and colorful mixture of cauliflower, purple carrots, orange carrots, beets, and turmeric. And then it's, you know, you got this ball shape, and then you smash them, you cook them, and you eat them.
Interactive. All right, I can get on board with that. That does sound fun. Get the kids involved, you know.
Yeah. So when she was in Boston, she didn't have any samples, but she had like a little of it demo, and it seemed like a lot of fun. But for folks in Texas, they are now available at a Central Market grocery store near you. The product is officially hitting retail after debuting on the Boston show floor. But what I think is super interesting here is that the product has evolved in those months since the expo. So when the seafood ball concept first debuted, the company was using Atlantic salmon.
Which, you know, plenty of supply, easy to get. Mm-hmm. Makes sense.
I saw this, you know, so I got the press release that they're releasing this in stores. And I went back to my original interview and I'm like, oh, did I mess this up? And I went to Erica Batterman, the marketing manager for the plant-based seafood company, to confirm. She told Undercurrent that the company made the switch to wild-caught Alaskan sockeye after learning that the target customer preferred wild sockeye over farm-raised. And she also said that it was aligned with the company's sustainability goals and nutrition profile. She said, a quote, it was a win all around.
That's interesting to see how a product can evolve from show floor to retail space. That's very cool. Yeah.
One thing I didn't mention about this product, which I also think is neat, is that it's using ends and pieces of the salmon. So this product is using perfectly good pieces of salmon scrap and upcycling it into this health-packed superfood ball.
I mean, looking at the product, it is very eye-catching. But for me, the thing that probably caught my attention first was the GLP-1 support sticker that's on the packaging. That's new.
Yes. It is a trend that you're seeing. A lot of people are, you know, using this medication and are following this diet, and it's supposed to support it. So they're saying that GLP-1 users, they often eat small, nutrient-rich meals throughout the day. And according to the press release, they say this will especially benefit with each 5-ounce ball containing 18 to 20 grams of protein, 5 grams of fiber, and 500 milligrams of omegas. And they said with 1 in 8 adults currently using or having used weight loss medication, Smash It arrives right on time. It's, again, this is like one of the few companies, seafood companies, that I'm seeing. I know ConAgra, they have debuted products with the GLP-1 like support type mm-hmm. of things on it. But they're one of the first ones that are kind of jumping on this trend.
I think it's super savvy of them to jump on that and start marketing, because it's true, and yeah, I think a lot of people will be looking for it.
Yep. Now, I want to ask you, though, you know, as someone who covers the salmon market.
I thought you were going to say, as someone who uses
as, as someone who covers the salmon market, Lauren, what are your thoughts on switching from Atlantic salmon to sockeye price-wise?
Well, that did pique my interest a bit to learn a little bit more to see if retail prices were needing to be increased a bit, because right now our frozen sockeye fillet pricing is at like $10, and that's well above farm salmon. So I'm interested to see if they've needed to, you know, increase pricing or use some of the pieces that aren't as, you know, in demand in the retail market, if that helps keep prices, you know, stable.
Yeah, well, a two-pack of balls here, they'll... they retail for $11.98 on sale at Central Market currently for $9.98. So,
all right, let's move on before you say anything else that might get us in trouble. But we'll stick with the grocery theme and invite our pal and Undercurrent price reporter Gary Morrison on the pod to chat with us about what's going on with seafood at retail. Inflation is rising once again, hitting grocery prices especially hard, according to Anne-Marie Rowrink, the president of 210 Analytics, which performs a monthly review of U.S. seafood sales at retail. She said that after years of mild inflation and even price decreases, seafood prices experienced substantial increases in September, and this was driven by increases for chilled and frozen shellfish. So Gary, you're our shellfish guy.
So shellfish.
Do you want to talk to us about what's happening with shrimp?
Sure. So, you know, Anne-Marie's report came out and it showed that frozen shrimp was up 8.6% versus a year ago in September to $8.51 per pound at the retailer, right? So a little backdrop over COVID, we had an oversupply situation here and a glut of shrimp hit the U.S. shores. Over 2 to 3 years, we had a drawdown in pricing, and you know, recently the prices have rallied given tariff and, you know, inflation and some of the other impacts outside of tariffs that we'll get into in a little bit. But really what's happening is higher prices for U.S. importers are here, and they are a reality, and they have to pass those costs along to their customer. So in this case, the U.S. retailer. And then the retailers in turn have to maintain their margins and have to pass that along to consumers. So we saw where these higher costs are now flowing through the supply chain in September. I think one of the other important factors at the retail level is the FDA's decision to restrict shrimp imports from Indonesia after some shrimp was found to have radioactive traces on some of the imports. And now, Indonesia itself, some of the organizations that are helping shrimp producers over there have some confusion over the new October 31st deadline. So they have advised their producers not to ship shrimp here as well. So at the retail level, one of the most popular forms for U.S. consumers is Easy Peel shrimp. And the main region that we do get that from is Indonesia. So what I'm seeing at the wholesale level is a lot of importer-to-importer trade or people looking to other importers because they just don't have the supply. So it's not only tariffs on Indonesia, but it's also that restriction that's driving prices up because there's just not enough Easy Peel shrimp in the United States to meet the U.S. consumer, so prices are moving higher. So
that's going to be really interesting heading into the holiday season now. And I'm going to stop us right there because that's going to be like a whole separate podcast episode because that's going to be a huge hit now.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I think there's going to be Q4 impacts across a lot of seafood species, not only, you know, what we're seeing here in shrimp, but some other factors. I mean, you know, there's a lot to go into. We don't want to go into it right now.
Stay tuned because we're going to have a whole podcast episode dedicated to it. But yeah, so fresh shellfish increased 7.9% in price per pound to reach an average price of $8.61 per pound in September. These are all September prices and data. Crab and shrimp prices experienced double-digit increases compared to a year ago, with crab averaging $9.52 per pound. That's up 13.3%. And shrimp reaching $8.92 per pound. That's a 12.2% increase. And in the frozen category, shrimp again rose substantially, according to Rowrink, up 8.6% from September 2024 for $8.51 per pound average.
You know, put one more point. I mean, we're talking about seafood inflation overall and I gave a little bit of blip about shrimp. But what we've been talking about, and I think the industry is trying to convey as well, if you look at these numbers, frozen shrimp at $8.51 per pound is one of the most competitively priced seafood items at the retail level. And I think the industry is trying to convey that because it's not only in seafood, but it's competitively priced against some of the other main proteins. I mean, between beef being at record levels and chicken at elevated levels, I think there is an opportunity because there is inflation across the board.
So speaking of staying tuned, Gary, before we let you go, I want to invite all of our listeners to register for an upcoming webinar on tariffs that both Gary and I will be on alongside Ben Fisher and Jason Huffman. Before you start your Halloween festivities, join the Undercurrent U.S. Wholesale Pricing Team on Thursday, October 30th at 10:30 a.m. Eastern Standard Time or 7:30 on the West Coast. For a free webinar breaking down the effects of tariffs across the major seafood commodity groups, our team will share fresh, data-driven insights on how tariffs are affecting salmon, shrimp, wild ground fish, farmed white fish, shellfish, and cephalopods.
I was going to say, before you start your Halloween festivities, that is pretty spooky, the effects of tariffs across the seafood commodity groups. There's nothing more frightening right now than that. Before we continue, I just want to give a quick shout out to our sponsor, Wisefish. Running a seafood business means dealing with a lot of moving parts. Farms, catches, production, sales, logistics, each often has its own systems and spreadsheets. Wisefish brings it all together. Purpose-built for aquaculture and seafood companies, Wisefish connects biological and financial data so you can see costs, yields, and profitability clearly. The platform tracks feed, treatments, biomass growth, mortality, labor, and equipment costs, then ties it all to harvest and sales planning. Instead of spending time reconciling reports and checking for errors, your team can focus on what matters, making smart, timely decisions that drive growth. Trusted by seafood businesses worldwide, Wisefish is how the industry moves from guesswork to visibility. Learn more at wisefish.com/catchthecurrent. Joining us now on the pod is Undercurrent News Editorial Director Cliff White to talk about another big story from this week. A coalition of major seafood importers, processors, and a restaurant industry group who have filed a lawsuit against the U.S. government challenging a recent move by the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration to block seafood imports from hundreds of foreign fisheries under the Marine Mammal Protection Act.
Yeah, so this is a story that's developed since for the past month. The like you mentioned, NOAA issued this declaration of bans on 240 different fisheries from 46 nations. And the U.S. Seafood industry, which, I mean, the U.S. relies overwhelmingly on imports to feed U.S. seafood consumers. So they're reliant on a lot of wild-caught fisheries, and no sector of the seafood industry is more reliant on imports or is more affected by this than the swimming crab industry. So that's crab meat, crab cakes, that kind of canned crab that you see that is accounts for, could be up to or over $1 billion of commerce every year.
It's a big blow.
It's a huge blow, so much so that these crab companies are the ones leading this lawsuit. So several of them belong to the National Fisheries Institute's Crab Council. So that's kind of a pre-competitive collaboration where they work on sustainability initiatives and marketing. It's housed under the National Fisheries Institute, NFI, which is the U.S. trade group for the seafood industry. All of those folks, so the NFI, along with Restaurant Law Center, which is a restaurant group, and 10 seafood companies, all doing swimming crab, have sued the U.S. government to try and block these bans from going to place. If you recall, the bans were put in place because NOAA determined that these fisheries did not do enough to protect marine mammals, which is required under the reciprocity of the U.S. Marine Mammal Protection Act. And the U.S. government was compelled to do this because a judge found that it hadn't done enough to protect marine mammals or to regulate foreign fisheries under the Marine Mammal Protection Act. So it was the U.S. government's hand was forced on this. But what these companies and what NFI are saying is the deadline, which is January 1st, 2026, for these bans to come into effect is crazy fast, crazy soon. It's in 4 months. And that, in fact, many of the legal or technical reasons that NOAA cited in its banning of these fisheries don't actually have anything to do with marine mammals. It's paperwork, it's lack of recording data. It's stuff that they say, why would you need to record data if there's no marine mammals in the area? So you just want these fishermen to write down that they saw no marine mammals every day? I'm not saying that's happening. That's just what the lawsuit is alleging. And on Monday, the latest in the case, they filed for a preliminary injunction to stop these bans from coming into place. So that's where we're at right now.
And I know, like the impact. You specifically mentioned Phillips Foods in one of your stories. One of the two largest swimming crab importers, they reported $180 million in annual revenue tied to affected imports, and they warned it would be forced to shut down operations by mid-October to avoid stranding inventory. That's huge.
Yeah, they're not shutting down everything, but certain operations. They have a handful of plants across Southeast Asia, several in Indonesia, which is the main supplier of swimming crab to the US, India, Vietnam. And they're saying some of those will have to shut down. And talking with the company, they say it's going to have a crippling impact on them. They estimate that the business derived from the affected fisheries represents $180 million in annual revenue. That it's just going to be lost. You can't replace it. There's no replacement for swimming crab. The US does not produce swimming crab. Every major fishery that does is being banned pretty much, or is significantly impacted by these bans. So it's just going to disappear. And that's going to result in tens of millions of dollars in value destruction to not just Phillips, but these nine other producers. I mean,
And a
I
lot of
can
them,
really
I think,
see
are
them.
involved in the fishery improvement projects too.
Yep, several of them are. And so yeah, they are involved in putting money into these fisheries to try and work on sustainability initiatives. So yeah, they're warning that this could actually harm sustainability by taking that money away, since the Crab Council might be forced to dissolve if there's no crab coming into the country. But yeah, you've got like Heron Point is a major importer. They say it's going to have a loss of an impact of $50 million. Cebu Pacific and Bird International say $40 million. Crustacea, $10 million. Newport International, $40 million. Handy Seafood says it's going to not be able to supply its customers. Three Fish is going to lose $40 million in annual revenue. A lot of their loan covenants are tied to performance metrics on sales that they won't be able to hit. So it could potentially lead to them not being able to meet their loan terms. And so
And
there's
this is
going to
just
be.
crab alone.
This
This is,
is these are all crab importers. They're the ones suing. But NFI, talking with their spokesperson, Gavin Givens, he says this isn't just for crab importers who are doing this. We're trying to stop all of these bans on 240 different fisheries from coming into effect. Other fisheries that are really impacted is mahi. There's some wild-caught shrimp that could be impacted.
as if
Yeah.
we needed any more issues with imported shrimp right now.
Yeah, there's just a lot going on, isn't there, Amanda? NFI is saying that they're not against the Marine Mammal Protection Act. They just want to see it sensibly applied. So they're not coming out against whales or dolphins. They just want to make sure that the move that the US government is making isn't so capricious, arbitrary, and like damaging to US industry that it becomes what one crab importer called a death punch to the industry. And we reported on that last month. You can read all about it. There's tons of information on how this is going to impact US seafood companies and the fisheries in many of these developing nations that are very dependent on this income to sustain livelihoods of these coastal communities. It's a really interesting, difficult story, and one that we're on top of. So this is developing. We're going to keep reporting on it, and we will see what happens. There should be some kind of court ruling on the preliminary injunction very soon. So we'll have that.
Awesome. Thanks, Cliff.
So before we hit our final story of the week, I want to provide one more update on the exciting things we have in the works at Undercurrent. We are making exploring seafood trade data easier than ever. Our new preset chart feature lets you access global trade data across all major species. No more digging through HS codes to find what you need. Simply choose your species and instantly view pre-configured import charts built from verified data. We're rolling out new presets every day with export views and full global coverage coming soon. Keep an eye on this section as we continue to expand our data library and make the global trade tracker even more powerful. Try it out now under the preset tab and see how many seafood trade analysis can be.
I've got the power!
And you won't have to listen to that when you open up the new tab. Don't worry.
Imagine though, every time you open it up, I've got the power. And it's my voice.
Right. All right. Finally, last week I mentioned how T-Mobile Park, the home of the Seattle Mariners, broke out the new Pacific snow crab claws and caviar for the postseason games. Well, as the Major League Baseball team headed into games 3 and 4 of the 7-game American League Championship Series at their home field, stadium food service operator Sodexo has launched additional postseason items, including a sandwich featuring Alaska Pollock. Mariner fans who attended the game 3 against the Toronto Blue Jays this past Wednesday were able to order the hook, line, and sinker sandwich, which featured fried pollock on a buttered brioche bun, finished with caviar tartar sauce.
There's that caviar again.
Only the best for Major League Baseball.
That's like the ultimate Seattle Mariners sandwich. But the real neat thing here is that Alaska Pollock is no stranger to T-Mobile Park. In 2024, the Association of Genuine Alaska Pollock Producers, also known as GAP, partnered with the baseball team to increase demand and awareness of wild Alaska Pollock. Supported by the Salt and Stahl Kennedy Grant for the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, the partnership introduced Alaska Pollock tacos at stadium food vendor Edgar's Cantina and included marketing support through rotating in-game and pre-game billboard ads and call-outs from announcers, amongst other promotions. And in GAP's 2024 to 2025 annual report, it noted that Alaska Pollock tacos accounted for about 40% of all proteins sold at Edgar's Cantina during its partnership. And despite the completion of the grant funding for the partnership, the stadium vendor brought back grilled wild Alaska Pollock tacos as a permanent item for the 2025 Seattle Mariners season.
Well, I wouldn't be surprised to see a caviar-topped Pollock sandwich as a stadium staple next year.
No, yeah. We'll have to go.
Make
and
a trip.
And find, yep. Well, that does it for us this week. But before we go, a final word from our sponsor, Wise Fish. From Egg to Plate, Wise Fish supports seafood businesses and aquaculture, fisheries, processing, and sales with one integrated platform. Trusted by companies worldwide, including Tassel and Nils Fehr, Wise Fish helps control costs, improve margins, and make smarter financial decisions. Learn more at wisefish.com/catchthecurrent. I've got the power.
And end.